Jesus never did confirmation bias. if there was one thing.
Yeah, that, usually the opposite.
Not usually, always. When did Jesus ever say a thing that everybody was like, yeah, we agree with you? Like, it was always a thing that upset the status quo, right? Even his.
Well, that's because he was punchy.
Punchy Jesus.
Exactly.
I think we got a show title.
Punchy Jesus. That might be a show title right there. Welcome to episode 289 of Pup Theology Live, a weekly conversation on life and faith over a craft brew pint, fine wine, or whatever happens to be in your glass. On today's episode, again, no Shannon, so it'll be Ogun and I, Reverend Ogun Holder, and yours truly, Reverend Brian Burkhoff, and we will address and engage what's happening through a theological lens with a good brew in hand.
And as always, that good brew might be in your very own Pub Theology Live pint glass, which we will send to you while supplies last, as a thank you for becoming a patron. Head over to patreon.com/ptlive, and not only are you supporting the show when you sign up, but you have access to some extra conversations, some extra banter, all the fun things that we choose not to put in the regular body of the podcast. It's a little spicier over there. head over to patreon.com/ptlive. And as always, thank you to our current patrons and for the opportunity to see me and Shannon live at the Wild Goose Festival. Brian will be traipsing through Spain or something. He does his thing, something. We will be at the Wild Goose Festival, July 11th through 14th, Van Hoy Farms in Union Grove, North Carolina. If you've never heard of Wild Goose Festival, this is a very progressive, Christian gathering of artists, musicians, speakers, podcasters, all the things. It's always a lot of fun. And now you can get 50% off the price of an adult weekend ticket if you use our special code A-SW24. That's A-SW24 for $50 off the price of the adult weekend ticket to the Wild Goose Festival. And today we are discussing work life versus spiritual life. I feel for people like us, they're the same, right? That's all. We'll get into that. Work life versus spiritual life, micro church services, and plastic. All right. Those things all go together. What are you drinking today?
Well, again, nothing exciting this morning. We're recording in the morning again, and I'm sticking to my not drinking before noon, despite Ogun's protestations. So just drinking a cup of coffee. This is a breakfast blend, fair trade. Mm. Nothing fancy.
Well, what your coffee needs is what I'm drinking, which is a little bit of a single grain Japanese whiskey, the Cheetah.
Nice.
And I got this flying out of the London airport. I think it was Gatwick. I'd never had single grain Japanese whiskey. It's good. It's what's the word? It's not as smooth and peaty as like your single malt scotches and stuff like that. This got a little more kick to it. My partner here described it as lighter fluid. I think that's a little strong, a description for it, but it's got good notes, and it's fun to see the descriptions that people have online, you know, the professional drinkers and reviewers of whiskey.
Yeah.
One person said notes of, I believe, vanilla sponge cake, which I thought was an interesting, descriptor for a single grain Japanese whiskey, but yeah, it comes very highly reviewed, and I like it. I like it very much. So I'm just drinking that over some ice. That's it.
There you go. Yeah, that sounds interesting. Sounds interesting. So as far as single malt scotch, I would put smooth on one end and peaty on the other end. So I would say something that's smokier, peatier, like an Islay scotch. That's got more of a kick as far as scotch is concerned. But if it's Speyside, it's that smoother honey, vanilla flavors. Anyway, I'd be interested
Then
to try this.
yes, this is trending on the smoother side with those flavors, but somehow it's just more
But
intense in
yeah,
terms
right.
of the bite. Yeah, more
Yeah,
intense
it's got a little
bite.
bite. I like it. That sounds amazing. Excellent. And cheetah, for those listening, is spelled Chita, not cheetah like the leopard animal.
Thank you. Thank you for that clarification.
You know, in case anyone wants to get a bottle for themselves.
There you go.
On to today's topics. All right. So, opening question, if you could spend 1 week anywhere on Earth, where would you choose?
I think the only there's two places that I haven't visited yet that I'm very curious to. Like some of those islands in South Asian Pacific area, like Bali. Those kind of places, and maybe go there, or New Zealand. So that corner of the world, I'd go there, for a week. Of course, time it so that I'm there if I'm in New Zealand while they're playing the Australian Open, and I'll hop over and
Yeah.
watch me some tennis.
Love it.
But yeah, I had to think about that, and I think that's what I settled on. What about you?
Yeah, I would probably be similar. I would probably say either Australia. Like, my wife really wants to go to New Zealand. Somehow Australia has always appealed to me. Like, I know New Zealand is gorgeous and all of that, but just Australia as like sort of a comparable nation to the United States, but that exists with so many things that are different in terms of the seasons are the opposite. There's an accent. They have foods we don't have. And it's like it feels like it's almost like where I live, but there's just enough things that are different that it's like an alternate universe version of where I live. Does that make
I
sense?
think, well, except the just a few things are different. It is a totally different place.
No, it is a totally different place, but it's like its own
Like the
world be
only,
because it's so remote. It's like it's its own world in a way, you know? Like they've
that's
got.
what I'm saying. But you started with the premise of like they might be enough similarities
Well, I guess
to the states.
similarities in that we speak the same language and there's a lot of white folks.
First of all, yes, the white folks, but their English and American English, like, and the accent miles apart. You might
Oh,
as
I
well be
know.
speaking a foreign language.
But it's awesome. Like, I love the Australian accent so much and so many of their little like phrases and ways of saying things. Like, I love it. I love it.
A
Now,
whole different language. It's like people coming to Barbados. And
oh,
we
yeah.
say, oh yeah, English is our language. And then folks come and cannot understand a word is being said. Because between the colloquial expressions, the accent, all the things, it's like, you still need a translator.
Right. Now, if you had a month and not just a week, would that change your answer? Or are you just, hey, let's just stay for 3 more weeks?
I think it'll be stay for 3 more weeks. I don't think I don't think so. One more place I would maybe add to that list, and this would probably be the month place I go. Now I think about it, is like I've never been to like the only place on the continent of Africa I've been to is here in Morocco where I'm at, right? So I would like to maybe go to places that more reflect my ancestry. So like Central African play countries where way back in the day, they stole and enslaved people from. So, like, Nigeria, Benin, Togo, that area. I'd love to visit my ancestral homelands, I guess.
Yeah.
So, for that might take a month because, lots of countries, Right. Lots of places to go. I think I mentioned last week the thing about the whole conservation disguise for displacing people and all that, and Tanzania. So like places like that. And then, you know, after last week's discussion, I was like, well, shoot, if I went to a place like that, would I go on one of these reserves that are, you know, ostensibly set up in the name of conservation, but there's a whole like dark story behind them in terms of how they were created and how they're being maintained for foreign interests and stuff like that. And I'm kind of torn because part of me wants to see. So I would have to investigate if there are options to see places that truly represent that, that are not part of the conservation scheme.
Right.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Very cool.
And that would take some time. Yeah.
Would take some time.
How about you? How about you? Are you still in Australia for a month?
I probably would. I'd like to go to Tasmania. It's like the little island just south of Australia. Check that out. You know, I'd probably take a ferry over to New Zealand and check that out too, since I'm over there.
So we should plan. So let's go, like, I don't know, 2025 might be too close. Maybe 2026. We should plan a trip down under, you know, 2 or 3 weeks, and we hit Australia, we hit New Zealand, we hit Tasmania. Like, yeah, I think we should do it. I mean, we have listeners, you know, down under.
We do.
So we should plant some seeds around, you know, hey, we'd love to come in 2026. So all you folks in Australia who are listening and thereabouts, we want to come do some live shows in 2026. All my Unity folk who are got churches down there, all the UCC folk, is UCC down there? You'll plant a church if they're
it's
not.
It's a US only denomination.
Ah, there you go. Well, it's time to expand. You can go down and, you know, under the guise of I'm scouting the area out for expansion after your denomination. Put some dollars in your pocket for that. And yeah, we should go down. And, you know, as our next question will get us into, kind of like meld our work life and our spiritual life and our pleasure life.
Exactly. Meld it all. PT Live Down Under sounds amazing.
Yes. Yes. I love it. 2026. Let's start. Let's start brain mapping that. Let's start setting the intention.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm down for it. But seriously, listeners in Australia, reach out. We want to come down.
Yeah. Yep. If you got a place to put us up or a pub that we can record at live, you know, shoot us some ideas. All right, John 6:27, the Gospel of John says, "Do not work for food that spoils, but for food that endures to eternal life, which the Son of Man will give you." So I read this as sort of, you know, a tension between spending time and energy on work and earning a living, right? The food that spoils, and pursuing the spiritual life, food that endures to eternal life, or stuff that's, you know, not as tangible, but still meaningful. And so how do you find the balance between spending time just with the mundane stuff of, well, I got to pay my bills. So what am I going to do to help me pay my bills? And then, you know, trying to cultivate a deep, enriching, meaningful spiritual life. And then how do you fit in like just personal interests, you know, things you enjoy, hobbies, etc.? How do you balance that all? And is Jesus saying, don't worry about work? Because he's saying, do not work for food that spoils. Well, come on, Jesus.
Well, I mean, one option is like, yeah, become a pastor. And your work life and spiritual life are all, you know, one.
Does that pay the
one
bills?
One and the same. Well, as long as you don't need to live extravagantly, you might get by.
Yeah.
But also, you know, by all accounts, Jesus had a following of people, not just the 12. He had a following. He had a ministry following of people who supported him. You know, we know anecdotally and beyond, you know, for example, there were women who supported his ministry. There were people, some people had money, some people didn't. Either way, you know, Jesus, for all intents and purposes, was a bit of a rock star preacher, controversial one. But, you know, if he wasn't to some extent, we would still not be talking about him because there were a ton of other people doing the same thing in his time. He was not the anomaly. Right.
Yeah.
So, but still, whether he said and did something that stood out, or, you know, his followers that came afterwards were really good at marketing, regardless, like, we're still talking about him all this time afterwards. We built a whole religious movement after his teachings. So my thing is, I think as a person for whom needs were taken care of, there's a little bit of privilege that comes along with saying this.
Well, yes. And so if he's speaking to maybe some of his wealthier patrons or disciples, these words like, hey, find some better balance, or, you know, don't be just about the material life, they'd be like, okay, Jesus, your next meal's on you, you know, or
right,
finding a place to stay when you're visiting Capernaum or, you know, Galilee or whatever. Like, somebody's,
you know, we have this stuff. Exactly. We have the saying, do what you love and the money will follow. And I can attest that that's not always the case.
Right.
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 So, you know, so yeah, I think there was a, you know, I wondered if he would have said the same thing if his knees were not taken care of. And maybe he's saying, like, you know, I am proof that if you do follow, you know, whether it be spiritual guidance, what if you follow this, things will fall into place, that yes, your needs will be taken care of as mine are. So, you know, it's one of those, what do you call it? The chicken and egg situations, maybe.
Yeah.
Sort of deal. Is he saying it because his needs were taken care of, or his needs were taken care of, so now he's saying it. But back to your original question, we also live in a time where, you know, systems of oppression like capitalism are literally killing us and breaking everything. So one of the ways we kind of push back against that is to prioritize things like rest, is to prioritize our inner growth versus the growth of our bank accounts, is to prioritize the things that bring us pleasure, if not profit. And by prioritize, I don't mean that's all you do, but, you know, we have people working full-time jobs and side hustles. And granted, some of those people, it's just to make ends meet because, again, capitalism has made things get so expensive. It's ridiculous these days. So the cost of everything has gone up, but the compensation for work has not nearly as much.
Right.
Right. Over the decades. So there's this disparity in order to make profits for the corporate overlords and the shareholders. So this is why in the last few years, like, a lot of, you know, we've seen like a lot of unions get in traction because people are beginning to realize this is a not sustainable. It is killing us. And please don't tell us you can't afford to pay us more when we have CEOs making, you know, 40 to 60 to 100 times more than what we pay, or even more. And that's just the average. We're not talking like the exceptions on the far end, like the Bezoses and the Muskins. Those are like, those guys are even the anomaly, right?
Yeah.
But yes, the average CEO of a corporation, you know, used to make maybe 5 to 10 times as much as the employee. Now it's 40 times, 80 times, 120 times what the average employee makes. And that discrepancy is killing the employees, hurting the company. But there's this pressure. So it does invite a broader conversation around work, which has been pitched as the, you know, part of the American dream, or as I like to call it, the American gaslight, which is like you work and you will get paid and you can buy your house in the suburbs, or you pick yourself up out of poverty, or like, you know, the goal is to work and finally retire. And then we can go visit those countries that we talked about earlier when, you know, we are in our 60s and 70s and
and on the seniors tour.
On the seniors tour. Exactly. Right. So, you know, that's been the model. That's been what's been, you know, indoctrinated in us. But that doesn't benefit us. That's not a good life. And, you know, more and more people are realizing this. They're pushing back against it. They're creating lives are unorthodox. And also, you know, my whole thing is, you know, can we create a life that we don't need to retire from, right? Can we find meaningful work that doesn't deplete us and create enough balance that we feel like we can enjoy the things that we love as well? So,
yeah, you know, that you can already live the life you want to live right now. And you don't have to say, well, you know, in 30, 20, 15, 10 years when I retire, then I'll do all the things I really want. And it's not that folks are looking to live outrageously. Like, most folks are just want a little room to breathe. And too many folks, like you said, have a job and then maybe a second job or a side hustle or two side hustles, because, as you said, inflation and cost of living has just way outpaced the growth in wages. And so there isn't time even to do the modest things you want to do for too many folks, for sure.
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, you mentioned at the top of the show, you know, the angle on this question for pastors, right? Where our job is to be a spiritual guide or facilitator or shepherd, whatever term you like. And so you're doing things for, you know, you're working for the food that spoils, but also for the food that endures to eternal life. Like, those things are sort of connected. And yes. I think that illustrates the importance of clergy to especially tend to their own care of soul or their own inner life, because you are professionally engaging with that stuff. You have to be sure that you are nourished so that you're not an automaton, so that you're drawing from a well that isn't dry, to use, you know, an overused analogy. That kind of thing.
I also now, you know, after having been a church pastor for the little over 10 years that I was, this whole work life, spiritual life being one of the same, horrible idea. And I always try to dissuade people from it. And this is not a knock against the people who are pastors and reverends and ministers and priests and all that. You know, if you feel like called to that, do that. But also realize, to your point, that within ourselves, we it is that much harder for us to draw some clear lines between the two. Now, there's a question around, though, even if you are not one of these, if you're not a clergy person, you know, yes, your spiritual life, I believe, should inform your work life. Your spiritual life should inform how you show up at work, even maybe the work that you do. Like, we're not these siloed individuals. Everything within us informs other parts that are within us. And it's to your point, I think for us who are clergy, we do have to silo in many ways our personal spiritual growth development from the work aspect of it. Now, where it becomes interesting, and I've gone through this, I'm still going through this, is when you realize that, you know, your spiritual journey is taking you in a place that is no longer in alignment with the spiritual context in which pays your bills, right? What do you do then? Because then it becomes like a, you know, I began to feel like I can't keep standing here talking about things or within this context that I really am realizing I kind of don't believe anymore.
Yeah, you have to be true to yourself, or there's not going to be an authenticity to your ministry.
Right. And at the same time, I got a kid to feed, or I had a kid to feed at the time when it was beginning to roll out. And
it's not easy.
It's not easy at all. And then it becomes even more challenging when the people that you serve kind of, you know, whether consciously or unconsciously, they want you to believe in the thing that they're showing up for, right? No one wants to hire you as or attend your church as a pastor if you don't believe in the dogma, the context, the whatever is there. There is some leeway, but you know, I remember this one time, you know, and I think I spoke about this before. It was an Easter Sunday some years ago, and you know, I'm in Unity, which is a denomination that we do not interpret the Bible literally. We do not require people to necessarily firmly adhere to even our own teachings and dogma. In other words, sure.
there's a latitude there. There's space.
There is spaces, putting it lightly.
There you go. But and yet, though, right? There's more to this story.
Right, right. Technically, in Unity, you can believe in anything at all and walk through the doors and you're fine. Yeah. Right. But I remember this one Easter Sunday, I was like giving a sermon and I'm like, you know, my views on if Jesus was actually physically bodily resurrected have been quite the journey, and I've come to this place where I'm like, yeah, I don't believe that Jesus was physically resurrected. And I figured, you know, I'm in Unity, so there'd be some, as you say, latitude, some space for that. And then I had a congregant come to me and said, no, I need my pastor to believe that Jesus was resurrected. Otherwise, what are you doing here? And I said, I thought the whole point of Unity was we accept everyone wherever they are in a spiritual journey. But not the pastor. The pastor needs to be clear. he or she needs to be clear that they need to be clear about where they are. They need to have resolved all of their, you know, spiritual issues before they stand others in front of others to help them with theirs.
And that's a dishonest, I mean, that's unfair, I think, especially in the context you were in. It's unfair to put that expectation on you. And I think, yeah, for this person, I would say, you know, there's more than one way to understand resurrection. You know, like physical bodily is one way.
Right.
It ain't the only way. And anyway.
And that's what I had to say. This person was like, okay, so let's take a step back and remember, in Unity, nothing is literally understood. So if that's important for you, that's great. You still have a place here.
Right. But right. You weren't out on a limb by any means.
Yes. Right. Exactly.
At least you didn't think. Until you heard the saw.
I didn't realize it was that flexible a limb. Right. And to be clear, there were some people who appreciated me being in that struggle because they were also in that struggle as well.
Yeah.
Right. Some people do want to know that their minister, their pastor is in the question along with them, is in the struggle along with them, is not. But I think generally speaking, folks who attend church want their clergy to be maybe just a little ahead of them. Right. In terms of this, like, you know, you use the term, like shepherd and you know, spiritual leader. Sure. Well, I guess the assumption is if someone's leading you, they need to know where we're going.
Right. Fair.
Right.
Fair.
But if you're like wandering around, like, you know, and I remember a good friend of mine who I consider also like a Buddhist mentor as well. I remember when I first started church ministry, you know, he's like, you know, how's it going? And I was like, you know, I've realized that as a pastor, my job is, you know, I can lead people to the water, but I have released the expectation that they're going to drink. Right. And he's like, he shook his head, just like this, like, you know, he's quite a few years older than I am, of course. And he just shook his head like, oh, you poor grasshopper, you don't get it. He's like, your job is not to lead anyone anywhere. Your job is just to stand in the field and be the presence. And I was like, wow, like that kind of blew my mind.
That's good.
In terms of like, you know, what is my role?
Yeah, here? That's good. I like that.
So I realized the role was yes, and to kind of agitate a little bit, to raise the questions, but then also not to tell people this is what it's about. Just show up for them in their journey, in their struggles, and in some cases even in their certainty, but also realize I'm in the field with them.
Right. Right. Oh, I like that a lot. That's good. I'm going to remember that one. That's very good. So speaking of work-life balance, people's busy lives, increasingly busy lives, a story in The Guardian noted that a church in the UK is determined to draw in worshipers who feel like they don't have the time or the endurance to sit on a hard pew for a long service, a meandering sermon. And so they are doing micro services, 15-minute church services. The first one is coming up, I think, next week, Monday. And so they're going to get you in and out so that you can, you know, get on with the rest of your life. You can have a little... You know, it's like a fill up at the gas station or the petrol station, but you're just filling up the spiritual tank and then getting on with your day. You don't have to stay for an hour. You don't have to stay for a potluck after. You don't even have to stay for coffee time. 15 minutes in and out. What do you think about this micro church service?
Well, when it comes to in and out, they say size doesn't matter, right?
Your words.
Folks, this is the moment where Brian distances himself. He's like, I don't want that to come back and haunt me later publicly. So I will neither confirm or deny what was just said.
Oh my God.
I feel like if you want a 15-minute service, like go to TikTok.
Right. Right. You know, yeah. What is gained by showing up for something in person for only 15 minutes?
Exactly. Because when you think about it, when you go to a church service, like the least amount of time is actually the pastor talking, right?
Yeah.
Like there's an hour service, there's hospitality afterwards, there's some things that happened before, all that. You know, what is the pastor, on average, it's like a, you know, 20 minute talk, maybe 20 to 30 minutes, right?
15 to 20 in my...
Okay, well, there you go. But let's say 20 minutes. Most of what happens when one gathers for a church is not the sermon. So I'm curious as to, you know, and it's funny you put this in there because, again, shameless plug for my Substack, Necessary Trouble. I just wrote about this, right? All the benefits that come along with church that don't have anything to do with religion, and to make the case for like a godless church. Can we, there is enough about church that's beneficial to the human experience that we can take out the religion, we can take out the dogma and still have a meaningful experience. And there are places like the Sunday Assembly and other places, there's atheist churches out there. Like, you know, all the other aspects of church bring, the connection with people, community, communion, as in sharing, breaking bread together, you know, lifting your voice in song. There's something about singing together. Anyone who's ever been to a concert knows this. You know, anyone who's ever been to a church service knows this. There's something about the human that feeds the human experience to be doing this with other human beings. And when I wrote about still, this,
those still last an hour, though, you know.
At least they can last enough. Right. No one's going to a 15 minute concert.
I mean, you take God out of church, it might just go for 2 hours. I don't know. You know,
it just might. But what else this speaks to is trying to find a gimmick to address the fact that less and less people are coming to church.
Well, certainly it has that feel, right? Like, let's do something that's going to get headlines. You know, that kind of thing. 15-minute church, micro service. It feels, you know, and they said they're going to be punchy micro services. So whatever a punchy micro service.
What the hell does that mean?
Like, I feel like you got to have some kind of a sermon in there to make it punchy. But is that like 5 minutes? Is it 2 minutes? Is that the whole 15 minutes? I don't know. But you also wonder, will people's like support of the church, will offerings go down by 3/4, because you only give me 15 minutes, I'm only going to give you 1/4 of the offering I was going to give.
So it's funny you said that, because back to that Easter story, the woman who was like, I need my pastor to believe that Jesus was resurrected. She was like, I love so many other aspects of this church, but I can't. And she goes, and I believe in, like, you know, 90% in what else you say, but I can't in good conscience keep giving money. Like, but I'll still show up. So I was like, well, hold on. If you still believe in 90% of what I say, like, how about you just give 10% less?
Right. And honestly, do you want a pastor where you agree with 100% of everything they say? Like, isn't part of the role to sort of challenge a little, to push, to prod, to ask questions, to be that presence, but also to push a little?
No, some people want 100% agreement.
It's easier, more comfortable.
Yeah, some people don't want to be uncomfortable when they show up for church. They want church to be like confirmation bias, right?
So true.
And yes. And I don't think, and here's the interesting piece. It's like if you're attending a church that's basically whatever Christian denomination, but modeled after, in some respects, the teachings of Jesus, Jesus never did confirmation bias. if there was one thing.
Yeah, usually the opposite.
Not usually, always. When did Jesus ever say a thing that everybody was like, yeah, we agree with you? Like, it was always a thing that upset the status quo. Right. Even his.
Well, that's because he was punchy.
Punchy Jesus.
Exactly.
I think we got a show title. Punchy
Jesus.
That might
be a show title right there. Oh, my gosh.
But you're right. I don't think we can grow spiritually unless we are spiritually challenged. Yeah. Otherwise, we get stuck in and, you know, comfort zones, great place to live, but nothing ever grows there. But I also think that a lot of people, when they go to church for all the other reasons except the religion and the dogma, then they're like, I'm not going here to grow. I'm going here to connect with other people. I'm going to have a good time singing. I'm going for all these other reasons. And there was a time where I used to say, like, then don't show up. I don't want you here being lazy. But now I'm kind of like, you know what? So be it. Like,
yeah,
like, this is in a world, again, where capitalism, white supremacy, patriarchy is literally burning everything down. And part of the pushback is let's connect as human beings, because one of the common thread through all those three things is hyper individualism. Yep. To be in a place where you connect with other human beings, and that's the only reason you're showing up. I'm not mad at that anymore. I get it. I understand it. And I support it. So those people who are coming for the spiritual food and challenging and nourishment, great. Those who are coming just to, you know, get hugs, break bread in the potluck afterwards, and feel good by singing songs, so be it. If we say all are welcome, then we got to say all are welcome for all the reasons.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I don't think you want to start parsing out, you know, which parts of the experience of community need to matter to which folks. So I think you're exactly right that some folks will come for the spiritual connection, the worship aspect, at least those going to a God-filled church and not a post-religion church, which is more my style. Though I applaud and like what you're proposing as well. And I think, as you said, it's countercultural to have spaces where we step away from consuming and where we step into community and step into solidarity with neighbors and develop those relationships. So I think we need more of this kind of stuff, whether it's traditional church, whether it's post-religion or godless church, or maybe even micro church. I don't know. It depends how punchy it is, but maybe even micro church, you know, at least they're trying.
At least you're trying. Don't judge it till we try it, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So there you go. There you go. All right. What do you think people of ancient times, let's say around the time Jesus was on earth or prior, would make of plastic? Like if they came across, I don't know, like what's an interesting plastic thing that you couldn't conceive of back then that they'd just be like, what is this?
I love that you go with plastic. And I'm like, dude, airplanes, man. Airplanes would like freak the fuck out of people. And you go with plastic?
Well, it's because this week is sort of Earth Week. Yesterday was Earth Day. So I'm sort of, and we have overabundance of plastic as the next question gets into. Yeah. Okay. And plastic is so ubiquitous in our world, yes. Right? Like we can't imagine our world without plastic, but before it was invented, people were doing just fine without plastic. But what would someone make of, I don't know, what's a plastic thing that would be interesting? Like a Tupperware container, you know, or like a Rubbermaid bin that's see-through, or a cup, or, you know, they just don't know, what is this material? Like, it's not glass. What is it?
I mean, if something plastic showed up 2,000 years ago, I think, yes, people would be naturally suspicious of it. But I think because humans have always been intrinsically not just curious, but greedy, I feel there would have been some people who are like, can we figure out this thing? Can we in some way use it to our military advantage or to our economic advantage? Because I mean, we are where we are now because humans have always been the way humans have always been. Like, to some extent, right? It's at some point in human history, we've got to conquer, we've got to achieve more, gain more, like,
yeah, no doubt.
So yeah, if plastic had showed up 2,000 years ago, we would be living in such a different world right now, and I think it would be much worse.
It would not be better. They also might, you know, worship it or use it as a religious relic, like, because we can't explain it must have some divine powers.
Yeah. Sent from God. So, yes. You know, who knows? But yeah, plastic is, I just read this article that there's so much microplastics in the ocean right now that when a wave crashes and the sea spray goes up, it's so filled with microplastics that it's now crashing ocean waves have become a pollutant. And I'm like, I'm so glad I'm going to die in the next 25 to 40 years.
Like, wait, are you? Aren't you going to be uploaded?
I mean, if I am, please don't re-download me until we've resolved all of this.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, Yeah. And so to your point, our next topic says the world produces around 400 million metric tons of plastic waste each year, not just plastic, but plastic waste. Mm. And every day, 2,000 truckloads of plastic waste is dumped into the ocean, into rivers and lakes. And one pastor, a friend of mine, Reverend Stephanie Allen, frames it this way. She says, plastic is a sacrament for our God of convenience.
Oh my God, I love that.
Isn't that a good line?
That is. Oh, yeah. That's a chef's kiss kind of line.
It is.
It's brilliant. Brilliant.
It's really good. And it's like, you know, framing it theologically, how can our world repent from our dependence on plastic, which we all know is not good for the planet. As you just highlighted, when the waves that crash on our beaches, on our shores, are themselves making the environment worse, our pollutants, we have gone drastically wrong.
Yeah. The ship has sailed. So this is why I am, okay, so this is kind of a segue, but not really. This is why I'm really scared of how AI is rapidly developing, because I believe that eventually we will get to the Star Trek utopia that, you know, is possible through AI. But I also believe that before we get there, we will get Skynet. Remember Terminator?
Yeah. We talked about this last week. So for those who don't know, right, this is like the wiping out of the majority of humans, right? To cleanse the planet.
Exactly. So I, you know, and fingers crossed, I used to say I won't be around for it, but because of how fast it's happening, I probably will be. I'll probably get Skynet, but I won't be around for Star Trek, which I got to say, I'm upset about that. But
you're going to be filtered out.
Oh my God. It's so depressing. But that, yes, we have continued to sacrifice our welfare or the betterment, the health, the everything of us in the name of convenience and commercialism, right? Convenience and profit, basically. Mm-hmm. And we humans, we learn at the rate of 3 steps forward, 2.5 steps back. Right. And as long as we, as long as we can still say that this benefits us in some way, we're going to keep going until the like more people are dying than being alive.
I think, sadly, I think you're right. We are, what's to stop us? Like, there's still economic advantage,
nothing,
convenience, all the things that
all the things
the world.
Yes. I do. Again, that weird optimism that I have in me says, I think we will get to a point where we realize that, and it will result in a few billion of us dying, where we go like, okay, we have to change course, but it's going to get a lot worse before it gets better.
Oh.
Unfortunately. And yeah, I think that's, I don't think we can change that anymore. And there are enough people sounding the alarm. There are enough people being aware of it. There are enough people beginning to pay attention to it. But again, this is the Titanic heading towards the iceberg. But it's like, we can see the iceberg, but we're still going.
We're still going. And now the iceberg is literally made of plastic. You know, like, you know, there's so many spots in the ocean where we have floating islands of plastic debris.
Yes. But the thing is that floating island of plastics does not affect me daily. Like, it doesn't affect me at all. There's an ocean of plastic, or, you know, a plastic island floating in the ocean, but I don't see it. I don't smell it. I don't feel it. It does not affect my daily life. It does not affect my struggle to pay rent. It does not affect my struggle to raise my kids. Like, because it does not affect me tangibly right now, me, the average person, like, goes like, that's horrible. But I, you know, back to our first question, I gotta find that extra job, that extra side hustle to pay rent. I don't have the bandwidth or the attention to do something about that.
Right.
And they're all interrelated. These things are not separate. But at this point, I mean, I'm sitting here doing this podcast, moving a mouse that is made of plastic.
Right.
Right. It's almost too late to, I'm not, no one makes like a mouse that's made out of recyclable materials, as far as I know.
Or wood,
right? Make a mouse out of wood, but then, you know, is that a place that cut a tree down to make it, or was it wood that was already naturally, you know?
Well, as long as it was sustainably harvested.
There is that. And it's wood, so it'll be eventually recyclable.
Right.
So it really is an invitation. Oh, and by the way, you know, corporations who market that the whole recyclable issue is on us, the consumer, versus them, the polluters, you know, again, is another gaslight.
Yeah.
So we got to see through that and demand more of our corporations, demand more of our public officials. But it's so hard when there's so much money involved.
Yes.
Right. But what's going to happen is we're going to get to a place where us as consumers will not be able to afford all these wonderful products that people keep putting out. And eventually the corporate overlords will not be making money because we can't afford it anymore. Because things are just getting more and more expensive and we're earning less, or wages are stagnating or not rising at a rate enough to meet the expense of things. So we're going to come to a head at some point. And I think that's, you know, World War III. Like, I don't believe World War III is like a, you know, a religiously based Middle East sort of thing. I think it's really when we get to that point where we no longer can afford the things that people are asking us to buy.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree. I think it'll be around resources, scarcity, territorial disputes,
yeah,
et cetera. Like, there may be some religion involved, but primarily it tends to be about turf wars and about scarcity or perceived scarcity.
So, I mean, again, I have hope and faith in humanity, but it's going to get a lot worse before it gets better. And it's really scary. I think I said this last week, it's really scary to hear the people who are building, you know, these AI programs, platforms, who are like, yeah, this could happen. This might be a thing, but we're still going to go ahead at like a breakneck speed.
Yeah.
And develop these things.
Full steam ahead. Like,
full steam ahead. You know, we know there's a nice, it's not like the Titanic folk, they knew there might have been a possibility of an iceberg, but they didn't see one until it was too late. Now we're like, oh, there's icebergs out there. We know this. But you know what? Fuck it. Hit the accelerator. We're going to go.
Yeah. Instead of changing course, instead of planning a new route, instead of being cautious.
Slowing down. Just slowing down.
Just slowing down. We're going to pedal to the metal. We're accelerating.
Yeah. It, you know, so, I mean, so when, and I encourage folks to like, don't get caught in the despair of it, because we, the people, we, the consumers, we, the bottom, I don't know, 90%, 95%, we have to remember that we ultimately hold the power, because we are the ones who do the buy-in. So what happens if we stop buying? What happens if we as the workers go like, we're not showing up tomorrow?
Yeah, no doubt.
If we decide we're not showing up tomorrow, nobody's making money. Nobody's building anything. So we've been convinced that we don't have the power, but we do.
Right.
And we've really got to lean into that. We've really got to say, listen, no, this is not the direction we want to go. And whether it's, you know, we go on strike from our jobs, or we start to build and curate a life that pulls us out of that capitalist gaslight, and whatever it is, the more of us that get off the, what is the thing, the
hamster wheel,
the hamster wheel, right? You know, more of us get off of that, more of us do that, I think there's a hope for us to kind of shift the direction, start to turn the ship, so that instead of like, you know, full on impact with the iceberg, maybe we just, I don't know, graze it a little.
Or... Maybe we graze it. Exactly.
I don't know.
Yeah. And I would add, just to be on the safe side, to any robot overlords or AI listening from the future, you know, please, if you could spare Ogun and I, we appreciate it.
Thank you for that. I thought you were going to say, you know, this is Ogun. That's just Ogun, not me. You're going to throw me under the bus. I appreciate that you didn't. But you know that, so that quote again, plastic is sacrament for our God of convenience. You know, in a lot of Christian churches, you know, that conversation around idolatry, right?
Yeah.
Like what is the idol? And we kind of think of idol, either it's more literal terms or idol becomes people. But yeah, just how we do business and how we exist in the world is, a lot of idolatry happening. And it's hard, because how do you exist in a capitalist society and not be a capitalist, right?
Right. Yep.
Well, yeah. It's such a difficult question.
It is. That's a good word to chew on as we close. Thank you, friends, for tuning in to Pup Theology Live. You can show your love for the show by becoming a supporter on Patreon. Get access to pre- and post-show banter and more. Visit patreon.com/PTLive to get started. And of course, thank you to our current patrons. You help us do this each and every week. Our top cities tuning in this week: Minneapolis, Minnesota, New York, thank you, New York City, and our good friends in Columbus, Ohio. And of course, you can always watch video of these conversations on Facebook Live. And if you'd like to start Pup Theology gathering in your town, find support and resources at puptheology.com. And until next time, friends, drink responsibly and keep those conversations flowing.
I'm clearly have been drinking this straight whiskey a little too quickly.
Take a breath.
I'm going to re-listen to this. Or not going to re-listen to this, but if I did, I'm going to be like, oh my God, I made an ass of myself.